This story goes back to just kind of the cusp of the internet age, back when we could still get surprised by flipping the pages of a newspaper and be like, oh, didn't know that. Oh, now stories are drawn to us, or we're drawn to them by actively looking for things. And we don't get surprised as much as we used to. And I really, really wanted to find the stories that weren't otherwise getting told and trying to surprise people with, you know, deeply reported city paper cover stories. That was why I got into it. I eventually got a staff writing job. I was overjoyed. It was 1994. And they threw me into covering local politics at the district level. So some citywide, but district level. And I did not have a car, so I was riding my bike to do my job in all kinds of weather. And I discovered parts of Baltimore that I had not previously known, except by name, and especially the far southern reaches of Curtis Bay. And if you've never been to Curtis Bay, back in the 90s, it was pretty much the way it is today, but even rougher. And so I'm down there and I'm covering, you know, like I think that was the 6th district politics, and I'm getting to know the roadmap down there, and some strange things happen. I mean, I'm on my bike, I'm on the bridge on Pennington Avenue, I'm admiring this creek and this vista, Cabin Branch, and there's like an industrial thing. And some kids drive by and they shoot me with a pellet gun in the arm. And it hurts, but I mean, but it was like, ow! And so this can happen here. And I was like, wow, it's going to come with some lumps, but I'm going to stick with it. So I really got into Curtis Bay and was covering local politics at the same time. And this was the era of an upstart new figure in local politics. Joan Pratt was running for city controller, and Julius Henson was her was her campaign manager. These all became very well-known names in politics, but at that summer of 95, when I was covering them, they were brand new on the scene, and it was really interesting because I was doing critical coverage. I found that they were in business together and had some slum properties, and they weren't keeping up the properties, and they weren't paying the city what was due for various utilities, and they were in arrears and all sorts of things, and she wanted to run the finances of the city, so it seemed like a legitimate, you know. And Jack Lapidus was the favorite. He lost when the Sun endorsed her. And so this is what people were getting used to me doing, was covering local politics. About 2 weeks later, I came out with this story about the Curtis Bay rendering plant. And that kind of changed my life for a bunch of years. I had first come to notice it because I'd been down there and got shot on the bridge right in front of it. But a year earlier, I had gone to a Hagerstown Suns baseball game. And we sat next to some guys, and we ended up in conversation, and they're like, yeah, hey, so we run the route truck for the local rendering plant out here. And I'm like, oh. And we pick up pets from the SPCA and take them to the rendering plant. And you know what happens to what they make at the rendering plant? They make pet food. I'm like, so you're telling me, and they're like, yep. And I'm like, I gotta get that story. So I go back, and I just look at that rendering plant, and I spent a year getting my way into that rendering plant. It happened in August 2005. They finally gave me the tour. I'd come back at them numerous times. I'd looked up the whole history of rendering in the United States and Baltimore City, got to know all the technical aspects, and eventually they let me in. And Neil Gagnon is the plant manager. His name is Gagnon. And this place stinks so badly. It is just, and this was August, right, when we went in. And the types of things that they were bringing in, other than the pet, you know, they're bringing in the pets from the animal shelter that are euthanized. But it's also things like, you know, the baby circus elephant that died when the circus came to town, or the police quarter horse that died, or you name it. It's just all the roadkill. And then, of course, all the restaurant grease and everything else from slaughterhouses. And so it's really stinky and really disgusting. But it's also really important work. Like, something has to happen with all this waste and they're making it into something profitable, and some of it goes into feed for animals. So it just is what they're made out of. It's fat and protein. But in order to get the story, the real hero was someone I knew who had a car, Michelle Gino, who was the photographer. And so she was the one who did most of the driving when we were able to get to follow the route truck driver, Milt, to go to Park Sausage. Well, first of all, the animal shelter. We watched them transport hundreds of dead pets into trucks to take to the rendering plant. Park Sausage to pick up a bunch of gross stuff. Rupert's Burger Meats, which was up on Pennsylvania Avenue. And at Rupert's Burger Meats, Milt, the route truck driver, gave us a little puppet show because there were these barrels filled with dead animals, including sheep. And he picks up this sheep head and he's like clapping it around. And I'm like, this is just journalism gold. All this is going in the story. And and so we end up with the day at the plant, and it's just so foul. And they have basically these trucks pull in, and they just all these parts just slide into the hogger, they call it, which takes all of the animal parts and starts grinding it up. And there's just the wind was blowing. Michelle was trying to take photographs. I'm trying to take notes, and the wind blew blood splatter onto our legs. So now we have, meanwhile, it's like your throat's kind of getting coated with miasmic kind of stuff that's in the air. And, we got through the day, and then we had to go to McDonald's to make sure we could still eat meat. And then Michelle had to go do a society shoot for the Sun, so she went home. And I don't know whether she had a chance to shower or not, because that's the first thing I did. But she had to change into a little black dress and get her bag together and go. And she gets to the party, whatever, the social event, and she unzips her photography bag, and everybody's like, oh! Because she had last closed her bag at the rendering plant, and all that air was coming out again. I'm sure she needed to clean her lenses, too. It was quite something. So the aftermath of that was, a lot of blowback, because pets are going into pet food. And no one had really proven that before. I don't think it happens anymore. but it traveled, and it traveled in interesting ways, because a couple of years later, did I mention that Oprah Winfrey's going to get involved here? A couple of years later, I get a call from Oprah Winfrey's lawyer, one of her lawyers. She was being sued in Texas by the Texas Cattlemen's Association for disparaging their food producing methods, which had been described by this ex-rancher, Howard Lyman, on her show. And I reviewed what Howard Lyman had said, and it was missing some details, but it was basically accurate. And I was like, sure, we can testify. So Michelle can't go, unfortunately, because it really was her photograph. So they showed 50 of her. We were the lead defense. I was the lead defense witness. 50 of her photographs, mostly of sheep's heads, because that was the main problem. Was that bovine spongiform encephalopathy, mad cow disease, came from sheep scrapie when they rendered the sheep into cattle feed in England. And so Howard Lyman was basically saying that's happening in this country, so we're bearing the same kind of risk that happened in England. So I was in Amarillo for 2 weeks. Took a while to get to my round. But they put a gag order, so I was literally like shut in a hotel room. I could only hang out there and only talk with the defense team and Oprah, which is cool. And I got my testimony out, and we totally poked holes in their whole case, and it failed miserably in front of everybody. It was really a big victory for Oprah's cause there. But I had a gag order, there's that word again, right? I couldn't talk to anyone. I literally was holed up, and the judge was very intimidated about anybody breaking the gag order. Meanwhile, Oprah was not talking about anything having to do with the trial, but she was quite a sight. I mean, every afternoon in the middle of the break, she would leave the courthouse with her mink coat on, and she would run around Amarillo, and all these people would run with her, and they just loved her in Amarillo. She's so good at this. So anyhow, that was my breaking in period as a young cub reporter at City Paper. And it was, I would just say, just listen to the people you sit next to at baseball games. You never know. Yeah.